Welcome to Headlines. This is Eliezer Goldwicht, and I have the distinct honor and privilege this week of filling in for my father-in-law, Rav David Lichtenstein, and spending the next hour learning with our wonderful listeners. This week, we have a fascinating show, a real eye-opener. The topic is, can Pesach programs at hotels really be kosher? Now, you need to understand, these programs, some of them have thousands of people. In the kitchen, there are staffs of hundreds of non-Jewish workers. And you need to have dozens of mashgichim making sure that everything is going according to the halachic guidelines. So what are the good programs that have good hechsher, and what do they do? They have one Rav HaMachshir, who is a big Talmud Chacham, who is usually in charge of the overall hashgacha. But then he has a group of 10, 15, 20 mashgichim that are working for him in the kitchen, doing 9, 10, 11-hour shifts to make sure that everything is going according to the halachic guidelines. So we really wanted to get down to the bottom of what happens in the kitchen. What happens behind closed doors? Is everything really glatt and the way it should be? So what we did was, we interviewed two mashgichim, two bachrim that worked as mashgichim in three different programs between the two of them, and we asked them to spill the beans and tell us what they saw in these programs behind closed doors. What happens in the kitchens? What serious halachic questions arise over Yantiv? What's the feel that they got from these Pesach programs? Are they really kosher? And then what we did was, we invited Rabbi Dov Schreier, who is the rabbinic coordinator of the Kashrus division of the OU, and he also serves as the director of food services and assistant director of Pesach productions, and we asked him, what would the OU do if these questions arise? And then we also invited Rav Kalman Weinfeld to the show, who's the rabbinic coordinator of food service department at the OK. He manages hundreds of restaurants, and we asked him also, what would the OK do if these questions, these real-life questions that have happened on different programs, how would the OK respond to these types of questions? So that's the show that's ahead of us. It's a real eye-opener. Stay tuned. It's really incredible. I'd just like to point out that the point of the show isn't to chas v'shalom put any program out of business and not to speak negatively about anyone who goes on a Pesach program. Some of these programs have the utmost level of kashrus. The point of the program is lahagdil Torah l'adir, to discuss the halachic shailas that arise during Pesach at these Pesach hotels, and to also to make the listeners aware that if they are going on a Pesach program, or if they do know of people that are going on a Pesach program, to make sure to choose one with a very good hechsher. Because what you're about to hear is shocking and sometimes even frightening. Before we begin,
friends and listeners and participants with all the emails we get, something wonderful. Do you know that Headlines 2 is going to be published and going to be in your Sfarim stores in the next 2 weeks? It took around 2 years to write. I took 24 what I thought were the best, you know, episodes, programs that we had with the Rabbanim. We have, you know, Rav Moshe Sternbach, Rav David Cohn, Rav David Yosef, Rav Asher Weiss, their opinions, Rav Mordechai Willig, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, etc., etc. I took the Rabbanim who were on those programs from three continents, and I put it into, you know, with the article that, you know, created it, the article in the news, the first headlines, I believe the all-time bestseller of the OU. So this again is being published by the OU, which I guess if they kosher all our food, that means they're giving us a hechsher on this too. And it's exciting. It's going to look fantastic. And I think that if you want to have something to discuss over Pesach, and you're sitting Chalamayit and you want to talk to your kids about something besides maybe Donald Trump, but you want to talk about an interesting halacha topic that will get your children, your friends, your neighbors interested in arguing, Jews love to argue, go out and get, we only published, the first run is only a few thousand, I'm sure they're going to sell out in a hurry before Yom Tov, so go to your Sfarim store and say I want headlines too.
Let's say one idea. In the Agada, Rabbi Gamliel says, Kol shelo amar, shlosha dvarim elu, the Pesach, whoever didn't say the following three things on Pesach, lo yasei dechovasa, isn't yet. And the Rambam passes this lehalacha, that you have to say the following three words, Pesach masa umar. Pesach, why? Now God explains, Hashem shepasach HaKadosh Baruch Hu al basei avosein b'Mitzrayim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu jumped over the houses of our fathers in Mitzrayim and he killed the Mitzrayim on Makas Bechoros. Masa al Shuma, Because when we left Mitzrayim, the dough didn't have enough time to rise, and it became matzah. Mar al shuma. Why do we eat the mar? To remind us, al shum shemiru ha mitzrim ischaya avasin b'mitzrayim, that the mitzrim afflicted the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. And some of the mefarshim ask, Rabbi Gamliel, you're telling me that a person has to say these three words. Whoever doesn't say these three words on Pesach, lo yase yidei chovasa, is not yose. People, whoever, you can only say three things, say these three words, and that's it. Why, Rabbi Gamliel, are these three words out of order? What happened first? First we were slaves, first was the Mar, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Makas Bacharos jumped over the houses of the Jewish people and killed the Mitzrim, and then the last thing that happened was the Masa, right when we left the following morning, we didn't have enough time for the dough to rise, and it became Masa. So why is Rabbi Gamliel saying, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim Elu, Pesach, Masa, Mar, what should it say? It should say, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim Elu, Marar, Pesach Umasa. Why is it out of order? So in order to answer this question, we have to go to Sefer Shmos. There's a pasuk in Shmos that describes that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu afflicted the Mitzrim with the 10 Makos, it only hit the Mitzrim and it didn't hit the Jewish people. And the pasuk says, V'samti pidus b'inami u'v'inamecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that only the Mitzrim are going to be afflicted by the Makos and not the Jewish people. And the Baal HaTurim says that there's two other times in all the Torah where the word Pidus is used. In Tehillim Kuf Yud Aleph it says, Pidus Shalach La'amo, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to send salvation to his nation. And in Tehillim Kuf Chaf, it says, Ki'im Hashem HaChesed V'harbe Imo Pidus. And explains Rosh Shalom Rukach Mibels that these three psukim explain and describe the three different types of slavery that the Jewish people have experienced throughout our history, and maybe even three different types of slavery that each person experiences sometimes throughout his life. It says the first type of slavery is when the non-Jews enslave us. And that's the first pasuk. V'samti pidus b'inamiu v'inamecha, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to redeem us. He's going to send salvation between our nation and the other nations that are trying to afflict us. The second form of slavery is a slavery where Jews enslave other Jews. And we've seen this, unfortunately, in the Holocaust with the Kapos, Rahman al-Islam, where we have Jews that are enslaving other Jews. And that's the second pasuk. Pidus shalach la'amo, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to send salvation to his nation. From who? Me'amo, from his own nation. And then explains Rav Shalom Rukach, the Sar Shalom, he says the third and final form of enslavement that we experience in life, and this is the most difficult form of enslavement, and this is enslavement that almost every single person has in one form or another, is the enslavement that we enslave ourselves. Our own limitations, our own addictions. I once heard a seminar by Rabbi Tursky, Rabbi Avram Tursky, and he walks into the room, and the first thing he said was, he looks around, it was quiet, there's a few hundred people in the room, and he looks at every person, he scans the whole crowd, and he says, every single person in this room is addicted to something. He says, I'm addicted to writing books. I write a lot of books. He says, but everyone has some sort of addiction. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's a limitation on his ability to enjoy life. So the third form of enslavement is enslavement where we enslave ourselves. And that's the third pasuk. Ki'im Hashem HaChesed V'arbeimu Fidus, Kadosh Baruch Hu needs to use so much salvation, but who yifteh Yisrael mekol avonosa. Now, just one idea that pops to my mind is an addiction that I think a lot of us have. I speak for myself. That's an addiction to our cell phones. I was in the park the other day with my kids. Literally, 70% of the parents were on their phones. The kids are running around. Instead of spending time with their kids, everyone's on the phone, checking, I don't know what, the news, email, texting. It's incredible. And sometimes, explains Rostorsky, we only realize we're addicted to something only after we're freed. If you would put the phone away for one day, when you come home, or when you go to the park, leave the phone back in your house and just be with your kids. You'll realize how free you are. You'll also realize that how addicted you are to your own cell phone. So sometimes we can only realize that we're enslaved only once we're freed. So explains Rutorsky, says that's why he says, that's why Rabbi Gamliel says these three things seemingly out of order. Pesach, Masa, and Marah, why? Because we can only feel the mara, we can only realize how bad the enslavement was, only once we're free. Only once we free ourselves from our own addictions and from our own limitations. And that's why the night of Pesach, Chayv Adam Laharis is Asum Kilu Yasim in Mitzrayim. Person has a chiv deraisa to feel like he left Mitzrayim. But the Mefarshim explain that a person, the night of the Seder is also a night where a person can free himself from his own addictions, from his own Mitzrayim, from his own limitations. You know, the $20 bill is getting a new face. Now, the face of the $20 bill is Andrew Jackson, one of the presidents of the United States. And in a few years from now, they're changing it to Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman was an African-American slave who ran away during the 1800s, and her whole life she dedicated to helping free slaves from their enslavement in the South. Towards the end of her life, she retired in the North, and one of the newspapers interviewed her. And they asked her about her time and how she was able to free all the different slaves. And this is what she said. This is a quote from her. She said as follows. She said, "I freed 1,000 people, and I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves." Sometimes we don't know that we're slaves. We don't know that we're addicted to our phones, to a negative midah. It's only once we break free that we know that, wow, that was something that was really bad. I wish I would have changed that earlier. This year, we should all be zocha to leave our own mitzarim, to leave our own enslavement that we brought upon ourselves and really free ourselves. The night of the Seder, we should all feel and be mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa of chayv adam haros es asmo kilu asa yasim mitzrayim. And at the same time, we should be able to leave our own limitations, the own mitzrayim that we built for ourselves, and have a wonderful, amazing chag kasher v'sameach. But let's begin. Let's begin this amazing program, and let's see, can Pesach programs really be kosher? Welcome Rabbi Avi Ratner to Headlines Radio Show. Rabbi Avi is an expert in Yoredeya, with smicha from Rabbi Zweig, from the Chief Rabbinate of Israel. He's been a Meshgiach at Pesach programs for over a half a decade. Welcome Rabbi Avi Ratner. Rabbi Avi, please share with us and tell us what really goes on behind closed doors. What goes on in these Pesach programs in the kitchen, where none of the guests are allowed? What really happens there? How important is it to have a good Rav HaMachshir? How important is it to have a good team of Mashgichim?
Yes, so hi. So to be honest, in the beginning when I started, I really didn't know a lot about kashas at all. And really, when the first year I started, I actually had a really good supervisor who really taught us everything we needed to know. And again, it's not a lot, because basically to be a mashgiach, it's basically just to make sure everything goes right. And just to keep an eye that only kosher products comes in, and to turn on the fire, and to be strict with the workers. And basically all the shilas who come up, really it's up to the Rav HaMachshir to paskin. So really it's not your job as a regular mashgiach in the kitchen to really be in charge. The thing is, you have to make sure you have good mashgichim who really do their job. So I'll give you a story. Once I've been with them, who actually one of the mashgichim used to go out every night with the waiters, and so you have to make sure really you have good mashgichim and serious mashgichim. But they actually don't have to really know about halacha so much. That's one thing. But you really have to have a good Rav HaMachshir who is very strict and knows what he's doing. And really be strict with the workers. And the workers have to know that really if they won't follow his rules and orders, he really will parcel their food and won't give it out. Because they know they have to feed the people the food. So if they know that if they don't keep the rules, the food will be parceled and you won't give it out, so be more strict about the rules and really try to keep them.
But Rabbi, besides for being, you know, on top of the workers, don't you have to come there a few weeks beforehand, before Pesach, to be machshir all the kelim that are there? Do you have to learn about hachshar's kelim, how to do the hagala, how to do the libun? There's a lot of, you know, halachas that go into making all these pots and pans and dishes kosher.
So that's actually a good question, because as we know, in Tafnun Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch brings how careful we have to be when we do hagala. We have to make sure the kli is very, very, very clean. Everything has to be sharp clean. And when you do hagala for so many stuff, for pots and pans and forks and knives, it's really hard to make sure everything is really, really clean. So that's something we have to keep in mind all the time, to really make sure everything is really clean. Because if it has a little drop of something, even in the cracks, anything could be on the side of the fork or the knife, the hagala is possible. So that's something every kashrut has to really keep in mind, really to make sure to go through every fork and every knife that you do Hagola to really make sure it's really clean. That's one problem about Hagola. And the second problem about the Hagola, you really have to make sure the water is bubbling. Because if the water is not bubbling, the Hagola is possible. And more than that, when you put so many stuff in the water, usually it gets cold. And because there's so much pressure, so it is something you have to keep in mind before you do Hagola all the time to make sure that the water is bubbling. And that's something you have to put in mind, because it happens that you see that the water is not bubbling. So it's something a good kasher should keep in mind.
But have you seen kelim that haven't been bubbled, or have you heard from other programs that they're not makbin on this?
So again, it's something that you have to keep in mind. And for example, if you bring a mashgiach who doesn't know really what he's doing and just standing there and puts everything in the water, yeah, it could happen. And I heard some mashgiachim who didn't know any halacha. They came, they saw, they're putting all the forks and knives inside, not really making sure it's really clean, not really making sure the water is really hot. So it's something the Rav Mashiach has to really, that's one of his responsibilities, to really make sure, tell the mashgiach who doesn't really know what he's doing, really make sure the water is bubbling the entire time. Go through every fork and knife that's really clean. If it has anything on it, you're not allowed to do Hagola taste. It's very, very important. Because I heard mashgiachim who don't really make sure, and that could be a really, really big problem, because you have to remember, that means the fork or the knife or the pot is still 100% treif. It doesn't matter anything you do to it. If it's not really boiling hot, it's treif. So you're basically eating a treif food.
Now, this is a real bombshell, what you're saying. Because the halacha is that if you have a kli that's an eno ben yomof, a kli that you haven't used for 24 hours, so when it comes to, you know, food that isn't kosher, if you have like a fork that was used 24 hours ago for treif, and now you use it in your soup, or you stick it in a piece of meat, so that your piece of meat isn't going to become aser. Because the fork is already nice and tam levgam, which means the flavor that's inside of it isn't a good flavor anymore. It's pagum. It's defective. And therefore, we paskin in the Yeridea that the food is still going to be okay. But when it comes to Pesach, at least the Ramah, which is the Ashkenazim, which is most of a lot of the programs that people go to, the Ramah is machmir on Pesach, that nosing tam livgam is aser. So if you have a kli that wasn't kashered correctly, and someone is using it on Pesach, that food becomes usr. All the food that person eats becomes usr. So you're telling me that if you have a Pesach program where the mashgiach isn't careful and he kashers a pot and he doesn't do a good job, the water isn't boiling, or there's a little bit, you know, that's covered, there's still a little dirt on it, and then they go and they make soup for the whole program, so the whole program is being over, according to the Ramah, a derabanan of a mashu of chametz. Right?
You're right. You're right that nosin tam livgam is usur only lekatchila, but the yevid is mutter and shari suri. But we have to remember, people are so much money, not for a bediyevid, right? People are, when it comes to the food, they really make sure everything will be lekatchila. So when people are paying so much money, they should make sure also everything is lekatchila, also halachadik. So that's on Gabay Shari Surim. But even on Chometz BePesach, you have to remember that, again, it's before the Chag. It's things that were Nizbatal Erev HaChag. So Noisen Tam Livgam, even on Pesach, BeDiEved, and again, I'm saying BeDiEved is kosher, even according to the Ramah.
Only if it was before Yantiv, but if you're making a soup on Yantiv with this pot.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter when you're making the soup.
Of course, if you make the soup on Yantiv, so then it's Noisen Tam Livgam on Yantiv, and then it's going to be Aser. But if you're making the soup on Erev Yantiv, so then it's Nathan Tam Livgam before Yantiv, and then according to the Arma, you could be making and have that on Yantiv. But if you're making the soup on Yantiv, so then you're getting the Tam of Begima on Yantiv itself, and that's going to be a problem according to the Arma, I believe.
Let's go to our second Mashgiach now. I'd like to welcome Shaya Umlis. Shaya was a Mashgiach on two different Pesach programs. Welcome, Shaya.
Welcome. It's my honor to be on this show. And I'm happy to tell you guys all about what's going on over there.
Before you get on these programs, do they teach you the halachos of exactly what you need to know? And was it different between the two programs that you were on? Shai was on two different programs.
So the first year I went to a program that over there, the kashrus was really, really, really good. And they were really careful about everything, from the small details to the big details. And actually, when I went there, I didn't learn any of these halachas, like special learning for kashrus to be a mashgiach. But when I got there, so I met the Rav Machshir, and he actually taught me the halachas. He sat down with me, and he taught me a lot about the halachas. He used to show me, he used to take me around, and also in shul, we used to sit down, and he showed me halachas. So that was the first year. The second year, so not at all. I'm saying I came with a few guys, and it was all about the fun, to be together in a hotel, and he didn't mention the halachas. Like, he didn't ask us if we knew the halachas or whatever, but I guess he assumed that we knew the halachas, because a lot of people think that when Yeshiva Bachar comes from Israel, he already knows these halachas, but it's not really like it is.
Did you see anything? Is there anything in particular that you remember seeing or not seeing?
Another thing that I saw in the second year was I saw one of the workers that he just walked in with a melchik pan with a steak inside, and he put it in the oven.
Oh my goodness.
And I just told him, I just threw away the pan and everything, and I turned off the oven and I turned it around, and I went to Rav Machshir and I told him about that. And I don't know what happened. I just told him about it. I didn't even like wait to see what he was going to say or anything. But the next day I saw it like all working again. And I was pretty shocked. And I told him that I worked the year before with this program, a rabbi, a big rabbi, and all these things that was with him, and I asked him all these type of things, and I saw different answers, and the second year was like, it wasn't so good as you could have seen that it wasn't on top of things. It looked like it was missing something about the halachas that it wasn't straight.
Now on this program, or on either one, the workers that are non-Jewish, do they eat chametz or do they eat the Pesach food from the hotel?
Mostly they eat the hotel's food. That means it's kosher. I saw twice that they ate chametz. Well, first year...
In the kitchen?
No, not in the kitchen. All I'm talking is not in the kitchen. I'm talking about the hotel. If it's the pool area, when they have barbecues, or one of the guys, workers... came up to us with a bunch of mashgichim, and he pulled out a bottle of Jack Daniels, and he asked us if we want to drink with him, and we told him that that's chametz, and we tried to explain whatever, but he didn't like, it was for himself, he went out, I don't know what he did with that. But the second year, we were in the pool area, there was a barbecue, and all of a sudden, one of the guys' workers came out with a chametz bun to put a hamburger or something in it. And I'm like, yo, what are you doing? And he's like, he puts his finger in his mouth. He's like, shh, you know. I'm like, no, you got to get it out of here. You're not allowed to be here with it. He's like, no, it's for me. I'm eating it. I'm like, no, you got to go out. And I don't know what he did at the end, but I guess he just took a hamburger and ran away.
So are these workers scared of the mashgichim, or not so much?
No one's scared from the mashgichim, basically.
Also on the first year?
Yeah, the mashgichim, they're more scared from the Rav Machshir than the mashgichim, because usually mashgichim are they're younger. When I did it, I was 19, 20, that's the year they did it. They're scared from the Rav Machshir. Let's say the first year that I was there, so something went wrong. And the Rav Machshir said to throw out something or a bunch of portions of food, and he said, and the guy that owns the business of the program, he got all upset, and he said, no, I'm not doing it. So the Rav Machshir said, okay, you don't want to do it, I'm just going to tell everyone that there's no kashrus anymore in the food or in anything. And I'm gonna leave. And when he said that, so he right away he started listening to him. The second year when something the same thing happened, similar to what happened the first day, that something went wrong. And over there, the Ramachshir was actually scared also from the guy that owns the program. And he managed to work out something. And I walked up to him and I told him that you're not supposed to do such a thing, whatever. And he's like, oh, you don't mind your own business and let me do what I do because I know the halachas and so and so. But yeah, the second year was a little bit different. But I was really in shock. Even after the second year, I spoke to my Rebbe, and I told him all about it, and he's like, yeah, and these hotels and everything, you gotta look that there's a kashrus, like the guy that's doing, the program that's doing it, they have a kashrus, a guy, the Rebbe Machshir should be from a certain Ashgacha that everyone knows and not that he's doing his own thing. He's coming from a real place.
Go to the Rebbeim from the OU and the OK.
We'd like to welcome Rabbi Dov Schreier to the Headlines radio show. Rabbi Schreier comes from a family of rabbinic leaders. He's the rabbinic coordinator of the Kashrus division of the Orthodox Union of the OU. He also serves as the director of food services, and he's the assistant director of the Passover productions. Welcome, Rabbi Schreier.
Good morning. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. So as a real expert in the field, what do you think are the main difficulties of koshering a hotel for Pesach and keeping it kosher for the entire 8 days?
One of the biggest challenges is to be able to get a hotel that is not thinking about Pesach, is thinking about non-kosher, and has everything at their disposal in the hotel, especially in a situation where the hotel is doing the ordering and the hotel is doing Pesach. To be able to ensure that every last detail is taken care of.
How many hotels does the OU certify for Pesach?
Zero. No, one. The OU certifies a number of restaurants, and they've, you know, in the end, the OU is not certifying a lot of places because we have a number of requirements of creating the ambiance in a hotel that someone should come and not have check-in go in and go on Yom Tov. There should not be a chametz kitchen going on in some of the places. They want two dishwashers for places. Many people, unfortunately, are not looking necessarily for all those issues, or are not able to ensure all those issues when it comes to Pesach.
So Rabbi Elephant, Rav Moshe Elephant, who's the, yes, the COO of the OU, he was interviewed on the show a few months ago.
Right.
And he said that what differentiates between a good hechsher and a bad hechsher is the ability for the Rav HaMachshir to get up and say, I'm leaving. You guys aren't listening to me. I'm out of here. Go find someone else. Have you ever heard of a Pesach program of a Rav HaMachshir or in a restaurant or maybe even the OU where the Rav HaMachshir got up and said, this isn't working, I'm out of here?
I've seen it a couple of times from people who do work for the OU but were not doing Pesach under the OU, where, you know, they weren't getting the kitchen. You know, one of the biggest challenges is when you decide when you're going to make Pesach in the hotel is working backwards, which means the hotel that you're going to wants you to kasher and make Pesach from Sunday, you know, the eve of Bedikas Chametz, and have everything ready by you know, Seder night. Obviously, anyone who's worth any weight behind him is not going to be starting then, is hopefully going to be starting even the week before, maybe even the Shabbos before the previous Shabbos, right, which would be before this Shabbos.
So let me give you three cases. These are things that actually happened in a hotel on Pesach.
Okay.
That I've heard from Ashgichim that worked in Pesach, Israelis usually that get flown to these cities and
right,
work as mashgichim. So these are three different cases that happened. And you tell me, we'll go one by one, and you tell me if this is something that the OU, or you being an expert in the field, would get up and say, this isn't for me, I would leave. So one of the things that I heard from a friend of mine, he said he was a mashgiach working in the kitchen, and they have a rule that none of the workers are allowed to come in with any chametz, obviously. But they had one worker there who was an expert in the dishwashing machine, or I don't know exactly, something like that, and they caught him. He hid a muffin in his pants, And one of the Mishgichim walked in the middle of the night, and he saw that this guy was cleaning all the dishes, and he was chewing and eating a delicious, lumptious muffin.
Right.
And they didn't throw him out because he was too valuable, but he clearly violated the rule. What would the OU do in such a case? Would they walk away?
Well, the OU would give the restaurant or the hotel two options, right? Him or us, right? Most effective would be to suspend the person for that day without pay, because that's the thing that gets their attention. We've had a couple of restaurants in such a situation. A mashgiach caught the person had brought his own food and he sent him home for the day. The guy didn't get paid and v'chol ha'am yishmu v'yiro.
And that's usually enough.
That's usually effective. But it all depends on the circumstances. I'll give you a personal example. Years ago when I was a mashgiach in a hotel for Pesach, about a day before Pesach, one of the waiters, one of the assistant chefs in the kitchen made a very snide comment to one of the mashgichim as the manager of the hotel was walking into the kitchen. And this is really the essence of how you can have a very strong supervision. The choice of the general manager of the hotel was either to give the chef a high five and say it was a good line, or to do what he did. What this general manager said, turned to the chef and said, "Do you want to leave now or in 5 minutes?" Right. Now, if the manager gives him a high five, you know how important kashrus is in the greater scheme of things. If the manager says you want to leave now or in 5 minutes, then you understand that kashrus is taken seriously and there's no games. You can imagine the rest of the yontiv, they were cleaning the rabbi's shoes.
Yeah.
Right? They weren't getting, and that's really, really the essence of when it's a partnership and you're working together toward a solution and towards making things work. Then there's a possibility. When it's an us against them mentality, which unfortunately exists in many situations, that's where challenges and difficulties come up.
Okay, so let me give you the second case. Case number two is, in order for Hagala to work, the Ramah says in Simin Tafnun Beis, he says that in Hagala Mu'alas Klum, in Hamayim Rotchen, which means that if the water isn't bubbling, boiling hot, and you're pouring in your knives and your forks and your spoons, it doesn't help.
Right.
It doesn't work. So he was made that he came, and as you explained before, he came to a Pesach program. There's a lot of pressure to get everything done in the few days that you have. And he just dumped in as many forks and knives and spoons and pots and pans as they could in this big bubbling water. And since they put in so much,
right, it stopped bubbling.
It stops bubbling, and then they emptied it out without, and they kept on being magil the kelim
in the
same water, and right. So then there was no agala. So now during the year, it's not such a big deal, because meaning it is, but the food isn't going to become aser because it's no same tam livgam,
right.
Because it's 24 hours later. But on Pesach, where the Ramah is machmir for no same tam livgam, so what would you as the Rav Masha do in such a case when if you heard this in the middle of Pesach, would you start doing agala again?
Well, you can't really do Hagala on Pesach, right?
Right.
I mean, but you know, one of the things that you know, our mashgichim who are at hotels and that's one of the when we're kashering silverware or kashering anything with Hagala, that's one of the things that they're paying major attention to. First of all, not putting in too much silverware at one time, or putting in too much of anything at one time, and being sure that it's a rolling boil. At the moment that it loses its boil, you have to take everything out and either sometimes replace the water because it became not clear water, or you know just wait for it to reboil. But that is an issue, and that it all comes to the initial thing we said is how much time do you have for kasher? That's really what it comes down to.
If you were on a program and you heard one of the mezgichim say this, would you get up and leave? What would you do? What would you give advice to someone?
Well, if you heard about it, depends when you heard about it. If you heard about it before, right, then you fix it. You say, okay, you go and go to a different location. You're not going to be on kashering, and we'll get someone else who's, if you will, be stronger, who will be you know, assured that the water is going to be hot and get, you know, maybe a couple of more pots or kettles, or use a second, you know, find a different machinery. But hopefully, you know, one of the things that we try to do, we'll use a hotel event. You know, when we're cashing a hotel for a wedding or something, we're always assuring that we have more than enough silverware. So if you need silverware for, you need 3,000 pieces of silverware, you're going to make sure that they kosher 3,500 pieces of silverware, just to be sure that they're not running out and they have more than enough. And so too, not only are you going to get more than enough silverware, you can also have, make sure that you estimate worst case scenario how long it's going to take to kosher.
So case number three, the third thing that I heard also from someone who was a mashgiach. So as we mentioned before, a lot of the mashgichim are young Israeli, single Israeli bachrim.
Right.
And on some of these big ovens or stovetops, there's a safety feature where the stove or the oven goes off after 24 hours.
Right.
So you have an Israeli who in Israel doesn't keep Yom Tov Sheni. And some of the people, the you know, they put pressure on him, oh, could you turn the fire on? Is there any way to be matir that? And what would you do if you would see something like that?
We would, you know, and any Israelis who I think who have worked on our programs are told that there's no difference for you, Yom Tov Rishon, Yom Tov Sheni.
So is that something you would get out, leave the program? Meaning, is that something, as like Rabbi Elephant said, too far, I'm out of here?
Right. The way a system is set up is there's going to be a Rav HaMachshir and an assistant Rav HaMachshir. Nothing is done without his oversight. I mean, I know a number of people who've sent mashgichim home on Pesach. Right, the Rav HaMachshir sent a mashgiach home on Pesach because he was supposed to be on his shift at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he showed up at 8 o'clock, and it happened once. And you know, all it takes is one time. You know, you're only there for 10 days or 12 days or 40, whatever days. Right, so he said, okay, you know, when Yantiv is over, you'll pack your bags and you go home. You know, one of the things that you try to do, and this is you know, one of the battles that goes on between the tour operators, the caterer, and the hashgacha, is they're trying to maximize their profits for Pesach. That means, you know, for them, every room is golden. Right, every room has dollar signs on it. So if the Rav HaMachshir has, you know, is a family with a number of children, so he needs to take two rooms. And then, you know, they go, oh, we don't want any other married mashgichim. But you know, it turns out that, you know, a married mashgiach is sometimes a lot more responsible, nothing against bachurim, but, you know, bachur is coming, you know, for, you know, to enjoy Pesach also, and maybe even to find a shidduch. Right? So it's not always the best scenario, to be sure that, you know, all you have is single people, and people don't have experience and don't understand, and right, this is a big challenge. And to do Pesach right without, there are many hotels, unfortunately, that are kashering dishwashers on Yontif back and forth, which is in and of itself a challenging process. There are a lot of things that are going on. You know, the OU, you know, we just laid out in our you know, and this was in our Pesach guide, we laid out a number of things that are that go into preparing the program, right? The kosher environment, administering the program, all of these things are done well in advance of Pesach, in order to be sure you have a process, you have everything in order. And unfortunately, it seems, right, that just from the fact that you don't see too many programs under the OU, it seems that people are more interested in maximizing their profits than maximizing the kashrus.
Well, one last thing, or two last things.
Okay.
I think this is an issue that I haven't seen anyone speak about it. Maybe you can shed some light on it. The Mechaber in Simin Tafnun, he says that I can't tell a non-Jew, feed my workers chametz on Pesach, and I'll pay you back after Pesach. Why? Because the moment that he feeds him, my workers, chametz on Pesach, so even though I didn't pay the non-Jew money, it's as if I bought the chametz and I gave it to my non-Jew.
Right, your benefit, right.
And then that's the stop. Then the Yesh Omrim says that I'm allowed to tell the non-Jew to feed my workers chametz on Pesach. However,
I'm not allowed to give him money before Yontif. If I give the non-Jew money before Yontif, so it says, if I say, here, take this money and pay and buy chametz and feed it to my workers. So in all these programs, what's happening is they're extremely expensive. So a guy, someone's coming, you know, spending tens of thousands of dollars. So some of this money or some of the down payment is going to the hotel, and the hotel is using that money to pay the workers to feed them chametz over yontif. So isn't everyone who's going on a Pesach program have this issue of them giving money up front to a program, and that to the non to the hotel, and the hotel is feeding the non-Jews chametz on Pesach. So they're
I mean, in the couple of hotels that I've been for Pesach, they weren't feeding the goyim chametz. If anyone wanted, they could go out of the hotel, do what they want with their, you know, but they were feeding them kosher Pesach food.
So the one mashgiach that I interviewed before, he said that the workers in his hotel have, they feed them, the hotel feeds them chametz. It's not from the program. The program doesn't cook it. There's a separate room, sometimes, you know, a different location, where the hotel themselves will make the chametz, will you know, make the food for the workers, and they go into that room and they eat over there.
That would probably be a make it or break it with the OU certifying a hotel for Pesach.
They would say
we don't want chametz in the hotel, right? If one of our requirements is that the entire hotel is taking over for Pesach, that there's no check-in, there's no food service, there's no chametz, etc. Because it's an impossible thing to control. You know, you were earlier mentioned about the dishwashing guy with his muffin in the dishwasher, right? That's you know, it can happen without the food in the hotel. Kal v'chomer, it's going to happen once such food is found its way into the hotel.
We'd like to welcome Rabbi Kalman Weinfeld to the show. Rabbi Weinfeld is the rabbinic coordinator of food service department at the OK. He manages over 100 restaurants in the United States and oversees a staff of over 200 mashgichim. He has also supervised at various different Pesach programs at many different hotels. Welcome, Rabbi Weinfeld.
Shalom Aleichem.
So what would you say is unique about the OK Hashgacha for Pesach hotels?
We are doing Pesach programs for years already, and we have a big group of mashgichim supervising every place that we are supervising. And the Rav Amashir, what we will send, will be going to the program in the hotel already a few days before Pesach. I will fly. We are not taking any hotel before I am, on a personal level, going to the place a few months before to see if it's doable to make a kosher program in the place. And we will take over an all entire area. If it's a hotel that not the all entire hotel is kosher, like we do sometime in the Bahamas, Atlantis at the Bahamas. We don't do this year there, but they have a lot of kitchens. But we will be very strictly and strongly about taking over a big kitchen, the all entire place, and the all entire area should not be in the same building and in the same area, other kitchens not kosher. And we will kosherize in the highest level that is possible the whole entire place.
And how many hotels does the OK kosher for Pesach?
So usually every year we do around 5 hotels. This year we do only 1 hotel for now because a few programs closed down because the problem of Zika. And we do in Vancouver, Canada, a huge program. And this is a very good program and also easier for us, and the reason is because we are taking over the all entire hotel. It means the all entire hotel will be only kosher.
So what would you say are some of the difficulties of koshering a kitchen for Pesach in a hotel?
The first thing that will be hard is before the kosherizing. Many places, they don't keep clean so much all year around. Some places, yes, but some places, when you come in, so you will find a kitchen that is not ready for kosherizing. So you need to tell them, please clean again and again. And until you see that it's mamish clean, totally 100% clean, you're not kosherizing. So this is the first difficulty. More difficult is to keep, as you know, the pasuk, what we say in Tehillim and we say it in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Mi yale behar Hashem, umi yokum mimkom kotshoy. There is one thing, to be oile behar Hashem, to kasherize the place. But then, that's even more difficult, miyokum mimkom kotcho. When you are already on top of the mountain, you want to stay there and not to fall down. So all Pesach around, you want to have such a good system that all kasherizing and all the hachones preparations that you did before Pesach, you should stay there and you should be always on the top of the mountain. So this is even more difficult, and this is why when you take mashgichim, you want to take mashgichim that they know what they're doing, they have experience with vegetable checking, with keeping open eyes. We know that the mashgiach's main thing is two open eyes to see what's going on and to recognize exactly and to also cooperate with the chef and the whole crew of the kitchen, because if you are not cooperating with them, they feel that you are against them and you don't want to be against them. You have the same interest to feed kosher food to the people that are part of the program. So if you have smart guys, a good Rava Machshir, and then a whole group of nice, smart, young people that they know what they're doing, and this is why you have a few shifts a day, because you want the Mashgichim should have enough time to sleep and to do the job the morning after or the afternoon or the night after in the best way. So to control the whole program all week is even more difficult.
So I spoke to a few Mashgichim, a few Israeli Bachram that went on these programs last year and many years ago as well. And they told me, or at least one of them told me, that one of the big problems with Haggadah is that they come right before Pesach, a day or 2 days or 3 days before, and there's a lot of lachat, there's a lot of pressure to get all the kelim clean and ready for Pesach. So you have the fork, so you have to check that each fork and each knife, there's nothing covering it, there's no dirt on it, and also you have to make sure that the water is bubbling the whole time. And he told me that a few times he noticed that they were doing kashin, there was so much pressure, there was so much lachat, they were putting kelim into the big pot and the water wasn't boiling.
According to the Rama,
that's not a good agala at all. Now on Pesach, it's a problem because Nathan Tam Livgam is usher, according to the Rama.
It's not good, and this is why the Rava Machshir should not be only around. He should be on top of the guys that are helping him to be Machshir. And I myself kasherized the whole kitchen, and not for Pesach, for a winter vacation last year in the Bahamas. And I was on top of them, and I realized that this can happen, that sometime after a few minutes, or 10 or 15 minutes, sometimes even less, the water will not be bubbling anymore, so you stop kasherizing, and you're making this hot again to be boiled. And not only that, of course you need a few guys from the hotel working on the silverware and all dishes that you're kasherizing, to see that everything is clean, totally clean. Besides the fact that we are very makpid not to kasherize a ben yoimoy. When you're not kasherizing a ben yoimoy, you have at least 24 hours that they are cleaning the place. And usually also, when we have a Pesach program, so the caterer that is making the Pesach program will bring with him a whole container with kelim. Usually we don't kasherize kelim in the hotel when we're going to a Pesach program. We will kasherize the ovens, we will kasherize the grill, the stainless steel tables, the preparation tables. But kelim, usually 99.9% of the kelim, we are not kasherizing in the hotel.
Let me tell the Rav another maisa that I heard from one of the Mashgichim. So one of the Mashgichim told me that he was once in the kitchen, and he saw a non-Jewish worker that was cleaning there. It was late at night, and he was cleaning the dishes, and there was hot water everywhere, and everything was soaking in water. And he took out a muffin from his pocket. He somehow managed to smuggle in a muffin, and he was eating the muffin. Obviously, it was chametz in the middle of Pesach. What would the OK do, or what would the Rav do if he would see this on one of his programs?
So I can tell you what I did, not only what I will do. When I was in Rav Machshir for the OK Kosher in a hotel last year, so I made sure the whole entire kitchen should be locked. And if it's not locked because they needed 3-4 hours in the middle of the night to clean the place, I had one of the guys, but he had a night shift, stay there all night. And they didn't clean the place without a mashgiach being there with them. And the mashgiach checked that they don't have anything in the package. They can't come in with anything to the whole entire place. But it's not only about Pesach. Let me tell you a story that happened in a Hersher. I'm not going to mention the name because mistakes can happen to anybody, but I got a phone call a year ago from a guy, a nice guy, a Israeli guy, that he has a few places in Manhattan. He wants the OK Kosher to give him a Hersher, and the places was Parev, just falafel shop. And I told them, no problem, but you will need a Mashgiach in every place. A Mashgiach that will work also, will help you in the kitchen, but I can't leave the place with going by themselves. So he says, what's the problem? The vegetables will be checked in one kitchen that you will have a Mashgiach. They will be sent to all locations with kosher tape and signatures of the Mashgiach, of course. And a Mashgiach will go around between one place to another place. I said, might be that halachically that it's fine, but we, okay, kosher, we don't allow such a thing. And he didn't agree with me, so he was staying with another Hersher, whatever the Hersher is. And what happened is that a half a year later, I got a phone call from one rabbi that he said, you were so right about your decision not to give the Hersher without Mashgichim. And he told me why, because in one of the locations, a guy, the going was by themselves, and they was cooking, and they had a deep fryer there, just for falafel, so it's parev, it's not meat, it's not milk, it's just parev. But they didn't know that one of the goyim used to make a hamburger that he used to buy by McDonald's next door or across the street, and he used to make it hot in the deep fryer every other day. And he didn't even know that it's a problem because he didn't have any Shomer Shabbos there telling them that it's a problem. This is why you need a very responsible guy doing for you the job as a Rav Amashir, and you need good Mashgichim that they are coming to the hotel not just to have a good time. They are coming to work, to do the job of the Mashgiach, and in the rest of the time that they have for themselves, they can rest and they can have a good time also. But you need serious guys doing the Hashgacha job.
Another question, I haven't really seen anyone discuss this, but the Mechaber and Simin Tosin Nun, Paskins, he says that I'm not allowed to tell, if I have a non-Jewish friend, I'm not allowed to tell my non-Jewish friends before Yantiv, listen, give my workers chametz on Pesach, because they're going to be working for me, they're going to get hungry, feed them chametz, and I'll pay you back after Yantif. Why not? Because the moment that he feeds my workers chametz, it's as if I bought the chametz on Yantif, and then he's giving it to my workers. That's the stam of the Mechaber. And then the Mechaber says, V'yesh matirin, he says, there are those that allow to tell my non-Jewish friend to feed my workers chametz on Pesach, if I don't give him money before Pesach, but if I give him money before Pesach, that even the Mechaber says, even in the Yesh Matirim, he says that's after. Why is that after? Because this is really what's happening. I'm giving my non-Jewish friend money, and he's going and buying chametz on Yantif, so it's kilu, it's my chametz, and he's like my shliach, and he's giving it to the worker. And that, l'kuli alma, is after. So isn't everyone who's going on a Pesach program, where the hotel is feeding the non-Jewish workers chametz on Pesach, so it's as if when everyone comes on a Pesach program, they're giving a down payment. They're paying money beforehand. And the hotel is taking that money and feeding the workers chametz. So isn't everyone who goes on a Pesach program buying chametz on Pesach?
No, because the hotel is not receiving any money from the program for the food. No. The hotel doesn't have to do anything with the catering job. What we do, and usually all Pesach programs are doing, the caterer is coming and is paying the Pesach program is paying for the hotel rooms, and they are just renting the rooms, renting the kitchen. The hotel doesn't have to do anything with the food. It's like a catering outside taking over a kitchen, taking over the rooms, and saying that the yid doesn't have to do anything with the hotel directly.
But the workers, the non-Jewish workers, they usually eat chametz. In most programs that I've spoken to, the workers are fed chametz. Now, who pays for the chametz? It's coming from the hotel. Now, the hotel isn't feeding the workers for free. It's because everyone is going on a program, is giving money to the hotel, and part of that money is being used to feed the workers.
Yeah, but the workers that are working directly for the program are being fed with kosher Pesach food from the kosher Pesach kitchen. If they want to eat any other food, they're eating by themselves. The program will never give chametz food to the goyim. The hotel gives not because of the program. If the hotel gives workers to the program, it's with another agreement, not with a way that because they pay money, they do this or they give the food. The hotel is having workers, and the workers are doing the job for the hotel. The hotel has an agreement with the program that this is the service what we're giving you. We're giving you a room, we're giving you to clean, but they are not paying directly to the workers. If the workers are working directly to the program, they will also get food from the program. The program will never buy any outside food. It's not even worth for the Jewish program to buy chometz and Pesach when they cook by themselves in the kitchen food. So they will give matzah, or they will give chicken or fish or vegetables or soup to the workers the same way like they give for the Jewish people. Maybe they're not going to give fancy food, they're not going to give nice plates with food, but they're going to give Pesach food because they don't want to spend money from outside. If they're getting any chometz, it's not through the program, it's not through the Jewish people. It's because they want to get chometz in a side way, no connection with the program.
Now, what does the Rav recommend? If someone's looking for a Pesach program, what should be the top three things that he looks for in a Pesach program?
I think a good Hechsher. I believe there's many good Hechsherim. Okay, Kosher is a very, very good Hechsher. And he should look for, beside the kashrus of the kitchen and whatever goes on with the kashrus wise, you should look for the atmosphere of the hotel. In yeshiva bocher with you, or your little children or little daughters or even adults, a Pesach program can be a place that you will get a lot of chizuk, but chas v'sholem, you can also be miskalkel if you are not in a good place and if you are together with other people that can affect the chinuch of your children. So this is also a very, very important thing to look for when you're going to a Pesach program. Who are the crowd that are going to the program, and if you want to be in the same crowd? A third thing, just to know that a Pesach program is not to run away from your community. From when I started to work in Kashrus, I'm saying another two kapitlach every morning. Two times Lamnaseach Yanko. And why two? One time should Chas V'Sholem never be a Mishol today in my job, in all the Mashkichim that are working to in my department. Another thing, another Lamnaseach, that if Chas V'Sholem happened that there is a Mishol, I should know about the Mishol very, very fast because I want to fix the Mishol. So this is why I will say two times Tehillim. And you mentioned Yom Tov Sheni. We all need to daven. It should not be Yom Tov Sheni anymore. We should be Mirta Shem in Eretz Yisrael before Pesach.
We would like to.
Friends and listeners and participants with all the emails we get, something wonderful. Do you know that Headlines 2 is going to be published and going to be in your Sfarim stores in the next 2 weeks? It took around 2 years to write. I took 24 what I thought were the best, you know, episodes, programs that we had with the Rabbanim. We have, you know, Rav Moshe Sternbach, Rav David Cohn, Rav David Yosef, Rav Asher Weiss, their opinions from Mordechai Willig, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, etc., etc. I took the Rabbanim who were on those programs from three continents, and I put it into, you know, with the article that, you know, created it, the article in the news, the first headlines, I believe the all-time bestseller of the OU. So this again is being published by the OU, which I guess if they kosher all our food, that means they're giving us a hechsher on this too. And it's exciting. It's going to look fantastic. And I think that if you want to have something to discuss over Pesach, and you're sitting Chalamayit and you want to talk to your kids about something besides maybe Donald Trump, but you want to talk about an interesting halacha topic that will get your children, your friends, your neighbors interested in arguing, Jews love to argue, go out and get. We only published, the first run is only a few thousand. I'm sure they're going to sell out in a hurry before Yom Tov. So go to your Sfarim store and say, I want headlines too.
I thank Rabbi Kalman Weinfeld and Rav Dov Schreier for joining us. We'll see you all next week.